हेलो हेलो गुड मॉर्निंग. लेट्स गेट स्टार्टेड. हाउ आर यू टुडे? ऑलराइट. So today we're going to continue the bitwise topic. We started that last time. And hopefully we'll also complete the ISA, a brief overview of ISAs. So at the last lecture on Thursday, we looked at a bit of C. We talked about some data types and then strings and how a pointer stores the beginning of the array. So the array is actually a kind of a pointer structure. And that we looked at some pointer arithmetic where we showed that incrementing the pointer is equivalent to indexing in the array. Then we talked about evolution of C through time, the many decades, and how there are many standards and they evolve and there are many undefined behaviors, and some of them rightfully so for good reasons. Then we looked at extracting nibbles. We started with extracting nibbles with bitwise operations, and started with shifts, so to the right, to the left, right shifts, signed and unsigned, and then there is logical, and then arithmetic. We taught how shifting to the right is equivalent to dividing by two, division by two, and then shifting to the left is equivalent with multiplying, not by two, sorry, two to the power of, and shifting to the left is equivalent to multiplying by 2 to the power of how much we shift, y. And then we looked at this bitwise operations that we're going to be also talking today about. I want to have a second look over this division specifically. There were some questions. I think you had a question last time about division. So I want us to look again over it just to, make sure that it's really clear. But I think there were some unanswered aspects of it. So in math, we agreed that when we shift to the right, we basically do this. We divide by 2 to the power of so how much we shift, right? And and here is some examples. So 4 shifted by 2 becomes 1, so divide by 2 to the power of 2, 4 divided by 4 is 1, and similarly 10 divided by, also shifted 2 times, 10 divided by 4, it will be 2, and so on. Now, with negative numbers, we are using the arithmetic shift, where we pad with 1s in the beginning, so we pad with the sign, with the sign being a 1, and we notice that in C, when we divide, the specification of C says that division rounds towards zero. So positive numbers divided by something, they round towards zero. Negative, similarly, they will round towards zero. But when we did arithmetic shift, we noticed that it actually rounds towards negative infinity, always. So that's a mismatch that had to be corrected. And the book describes this solution where, since that's the case, just add something to the operand. So the number we are shifting, right? Just add something to it. So add this bias adjustment. So in this case, in the code we looked at last time, if we divide by 8, we add a 7. So there is this this first line here. And then if the number is negative, we actually use that adjusted value. If the number is positive, we don't use this. We just use the value as is. And I want to show how this actually works with some examples. So first, let's look at positive numbers. Just for example, 29 divided by 8. 8 being 2 to the power of 3, so that's shift by 3, right? So in this case, this is 29, 32-bit value. That's 29 right there. And those are the bits that we are more interested in. And then we shift by 3 to the right. So we will end up removing this 3, right? And pad with some zeros. And this will be our value. And it turns out that the result is 3. And if we do this with the numbers in the proximity, of 29. So x being the value that, you know, the argument of the division with decimals. So x divided by 8, just if you do it on the calculator, you get this this value. Also, I approximated down to the first decimal. Didn't want to fit some more. So if we do the div in C, we get, you know, 3. So it rounds towards 0. And then at 32, we get 4, and so on. This is clear, right? Now, if we shift to the right by 3, we get the same behavior. Since this is a positive number, there is perfect match. 3 matches and then 4. No problem. And then the problem arises here when we have negative number, minus 29. So minus 29 starts with all ones, right? And it's basically the previous value. Flip all the bits and add 1. So here we have 1, 1, 1, 0, 1. Flip all the bits, we'll have 0, 0, 0, 1, 0. Then add 1, will be 1, 1, right? 0, 0, 0, 1, 1. And that is what we have there. 0, 0, 0, so, and then 1, 1. That's minus 29. Now we shift to the right and we remove this 3 and we end up with this 0, 0 at the end. And we pad with 1, right? And it turns out that the result is minus 4. This is minus 4. Why is this minus 4? Again, flip all the bits. That's 1, 1, and add 1. So that's 3 plus 1, 4, right? So that's wrong, right? That meaning that there's a disparity. We wanted it to be minus 3 right there, right? That's what we expect, and you know, that's what C expects, and then we get minus 4, so we have to add this bias. So if we add the bias, and in this case a plus 7, because that's what the book says, we're going to end up with 29 minus 29 plus 7 would be minus 22. Minus 22 turns out to be this binary value. 53 values, and we end up with minus 3. So now looking at the table here, similar to the previous one, right? With x being these numbers in the proximity of minus 29, and then if you do it in a calculator, you get this decimal with the decimal value. Now, here's what we expect, right? We expect to have minus 3 all the way, and then minus 4. And if we do this regular operation, shift by 3, we do get minus 3 for that case, for minus 24. Minus 24 divided by 8 doesn't give us a remainder. It just remainder is 0. But then as soon as we have a remainder, we get the minus 4. And these values are different, right? We see these values here don't match. And then at 32, again, we have no remainder. So this matches again. But then as soon as, you know, 33, again, we have minus 5. So the same problem repeats. So what's the idea in the book is, let's say we are looking at number 25. If we add 1, we shift it to 24. So we're always going to be in this case here, which gives us the right number. So that's the whole point of the book. You know, just add this bias and we'll always be in this case or earlier. Say at 25, if I add 2, I'll just be at this other value, but that's still correct. If I had 3, I'll be, you know, the one before 24, maybe 2 times before. So what's, you know, how far do we need to go? Well, the last one is minus 31. We want to have a minus 3. So if we add a 7, we'll have minus 24. So that's why we add a 7. Minus 31 plus 7 gives us minus 24. And we end up correcting the values perfectly. Does that answer your question? Is it good? Questions about this? Do we agree? Method works. The math checks out. Because last time I tried to replicate this and I kind of messed it up. So, yeah.
Where did the plus 75
say? So the reason why we are looking at this is it's a method described in the book, in the textbook. And, you know, it's just like, you know, If you have a better method, of course, you know, we can look at it. But I think that's like the easiest method. Even if the textbook wouldn't say it, That's the method I would propose, right? We have a problem that there's a mismatch in between what C wants us to have and what the using operator gives us. So if the solution would be to add a bias, and looking at this table, the bias, the value that always works is, what are we dividing minus one? If you're dividing by 8, 8 minus 1, 7. If you're dividing by 32, you know, you'll add a 31. Yeah. Okay. Cool. Okay. Now, moving forward to bitwise, again, a short recap. We looked at AND. So what does AND do? Well, we have the truth table. We know what AND does. But how can we use AND? So we can use it to create a mask. And let's have a look how that works. So let's say these are the bits of the mask. Now, when for value 1, the input stays the same. So 0 stays 0, 1 stays 1. So value 1 leaves the input the same. Doesn't change. And between, you know, x, or that's not x, and then ended with 1 will give us x, right? That's nice. And then if we have value 0, then no matter what we have, it becomes 0. So we clear the input. So x ended with 0 will give us 0, right? We clear. Yeah, and we can use this to construct a mask. And this is done at every bit in a like a vector, in a register full with bits. So let's look at some examples. In this case, we have some numbers. Specifically, for example, 2 and 4, where 4 is our mask. So 4 is this value here. And it's not really the best example, but only this bit would actually, you know, remain the same. In this case, 0 remained 0. All other bits were cleared. And if we have another number, 10 and 7, where 7 is the mask, then these 3 bits remain the same, and this one is cleared. So this one is cleared. In hex, I think in hex is the most like practical way of looking. Yes, go ahead. I'll just write it down here, right? If we have some values, say x0, x1, x2, x3, x4, and so on, and then our mask, this is the mask. So the mask, think of it as, when you, like, for example, graffiti, you have a stencil, you put the stencil and then you spray. So some stuff goes on the wall and some other stuff stays on the stencil. That's like a mask, right? The stencil itself is a mask. So in this case, I could have like ones and then zeros. So this will pass, so the values will go, x0, x1, x2, x3 will pass like through the stencil, while these other values will just be set to 0, because it does end bit by bit. One more time. A filter. Let's call it a mask for now. Because I feel like if I go into filter theory, digital signal processing, people might say, wait a second, that's a different terminal, a different area, and so on. Discrete Fourier transforms and so on. You could say it's a filter if you prefer thinking of it as a filter, but I mean, mask is a stencil of graffiti, or just a mask like that. It's pretty clear, I think. Or just to try to adopt this terminology, or call it mask. In hex, it's pretty practical. For example, we have A, B, C, D, ended with this value here, where F is all ones and 0 is 0, right? So A will be
erased, meaning cleaned, and C will also be cleaned, while B and D will remain there, will be left. So that's an AND mask. That's a mask made by the bitwise AND operator. In C, we can have the instruction foo AND bar, and then in assembly we have the instruction just AND register. Let's skip that. And here's an example. So the problem is to extract this digit here, the nibble, not the digit, the nibble 3. This is a hexadecimal, the four values. That's 16 bits. And we want to extract this second nibble, the value 3. So one way to do it is we can shift by 4, and that will remove the 4. So by shifting by 4, we are removing this 4. And then we end with this value, which is, you can think of it as 00F, right? The zeros, we can put as many as we want. So 1 and 2 will be ended with the 0, and they will cancel, and in the end we'll just have 3. And that's equivalent to this math operation here, where we divide by 16 and then do modulo also 16. The bits will look like that. Alternatively, we can reverse this operation or just use the different order. First, AND bitwise AND with the mask. So value ended with this F0. What will that give us? This F0, so we have 0x1234, and an F0, that's F0 and 00, right? So we're going to have just 3 and then 0. So we have to also get rid of the 0, which is what we achieved by shifting by 4. Questions about this? Yep. How do I get 3 by what? I think I didn't hear it again. Can you please repeat again? When I end 3 and F. Oh, yes, I got it. Okay. So what is 3? 3 is several bits. It's 0, 0, 1, 1. That's 3. What is F? F is 1, 1, 1, 1. And then when we end them, 1 end with 1 is 1, 1 end with 1 is 1, 0 with 1, 0, 0 with 1, 0. That's it. Yeah. Okay. Questions more? Here is assembly code that does the previous two C code. So in addition to AND, so we noticed the AND allows us to conditionally clear a bit. So 0 will conditionally clear, conditionally keep the 1, right? Now with OR, conditionally set a bit. So the 1, whenever we OR something with 1, it gives us a 1. And that's what we call, we set the bit to 1. No matter what it was, we set it to 1. So we can conditionally set a bit or leave it as is. Anything we OR with 0 is that anything we started with. And then with XOR, we can conditionally flip a bit. So with 0, the value stays the same. 0 stays 0, 1 stays 1. But with 1, we can flip the bit. So 0 becomes 1, 1 becomes 0. Kind of like a negate, right? Questions about this? Yeah. Which of these operations is faster in hardware? So that's a circuit level. I mean, technically, you have a clock cycle, and the clock cycle is as granular as you can go on a processor when you execute an instruction. So it makes they will all take one clock cycle, right? Each of these. It's not like, you know, one of them on the processor will run faster. Now, if you observe the circuit itself, okay, and NAND, so an AND is a NAND with an inverter. So that would be probably the fastest, because it only has two transistors with one more, so three transistors. And NOR might have a little bit more capacity there, so there's some transistors in parallel. But, you know, when you do something like on the FPGA or in ASIC, when you're creating a chip, okay, there you might care about the propagation delay of the circuit. But in a processor, when you're designing the processor, perhaps, but there will be other operations like add, compare, right? There will be other operations, fetch from memory, load, store, decode the instruction. Those would be, you know, even longer than just doing an AND. Because an AND in the end, you just have in parallel a bunch of gates that do AND between the bits. So they're not the slowest. They're not the ones that slow down your processor. There are heavier things. Yeah. Of course. So an example for OR, bitwise OR, we looked at these numbers before. In this case, this is like our mask, but you know, OR sets the bit, right? So every bit here will be one, and then this bit is left as is. So this is set to one, and this is left. And the hexadecimal, you know, F and F will be both set to F and F. So the Fs will, all those bits that correspond to the mask F will be set, and then A and C are left as they were. And similarly for XOR, here we have a zero, meaning that the value is left as it was, and then all these are ones, meaning that the other values were flipped. So zero became one, one became zero, zero became one. And again, for hexadecimal, A and C were, you know, left as they were, and then B and D were flipped. Last operand we are going to look at is negation. Negation negates every single bit, so it's bitwise negation, and it's like a symbol tilde. And you can think of it as the bitwise version of the exclamation point. Now, not of zero is one, but the not of not zero, it can be anything, right, is zero. So not of two would be zero. But in this case, negation, so not, exclamation point of zero is one, exclamation point of anything, for like two or any number or just one, will give us zero. But then the not is different, because, you know, if you give it a zero, it will give you all ones. So F minus one, basically. And then not of any other value will just flip every bit. So in this case, not two, we'll end up with a D there, aka minus three. So in the lab is actually already open, and you can experiment and get started with it. But the lab officially starts tomorrow evening. And then there's a section that we're supposed to finish in the lab, and then there are several extra work that is as homework. And it's all about bit puzzles, where you will be manipulating these bits using bitwise operations. It's good to have this skill, because it makes you think in terms of bits. It helps you learn and practice, and, you know, get this skill, absorb, grasp this skill set of just being able to work with bits. And makes you think in terms of processor, in terms of registers, bits in the registers. And sometimes you can use this to implement things very efficiently. You know, in C, I don't think the compiler always will, you know, go to bitwise. So if you can do it in C, the compiler, you're helping the compiler. And I think in interviews, you might often be asked, can you make this operation faster? And then you pull a trick. from the Bitwise book, and you know, you get a job. So let's have a look at this if else operator called ternary operator. So the question mark, ternary operator, it's really like X question mark, Y or else Z. So if X, Y, else Z. Sometimes I read this as X, Y, else Z. X question mark. Yeah, it's almost verbal, right? Y, else Z. So ternary as bitwise. So the problem that we are going to be trying to solve here in class is, let's implement this if else, this ternary operator, without actually using if else, without having comparison jumps in the assembly and so on. Let's try to implement this with bitwise. And when you have a problem like this, it helps to break it down into smaller problems. So here is a breakdown of the problems. First, we're going to assume that X, Y, and Z are one bit. And then we'll, you know, grow to more bit. And additionally, we will break it down into these two chunks. So X question mark Y else Z is equivalent to X question mark Y else zero, or X question mark zero Z. And well, that's actually visible a bit better here. So if we do an OR between these two, Y OR'd with zero is Y, and zero OR'd with Z is Z. So, you know, by adding these two, by ORing these two, we're in the same place. This holds. And to make sure that holds, we can actually do an exercise. Do we have an exercise? I thought we have an exercise, but maybe I removed it. Anyway, so let's implement the first one. X question mark Y else zero. And the constraints is that all of them are just either zero or one. So what do we really want? So when X is zero, we want to return zero, right? So if Y is zero, we return zero. And if Y is one, we also return zero. That's the truth table, right? And then when X is one, we want to return Y. And then again, depending on the value of Y, if Y is zero, we return zero. If Y is one, we return Y. We return Y itself, right? And that looks like an AND, right? So it's fair to say that this is equivalent to that X question mark Y else zero is equivalent to just X and Y. Questions? Do we agree? Doubts? Yeah.
What if Y is not?
Well, in this case, we assume that Y is zero or one. We're gonna have we'll try to solve that next. Yep. Are we treating them as Boolean values? Yes. In this simplification, first step, X, Y, and Z are Boolean values, or just one bit values. Yeah. So we have the first part. We have the first part, right? Now, what about the next part? Well, the next part is really the opposite of X. So if we replace X with negative X, then we get the other condition. We could rewrite the truth table, but that's another, you know, cheat way to do it. Now we do have binary not, right? Or we have that bitwise operator. So we are still in bitwise field here. So we can replace the initial those two. So first we replaced the initial statement with this break down, so divide the two other statements or together. And then each of them, we determine that we can replace them with this bitwise expressions. So we basically are done with this first part. Do you agree? Questions about this? Should we go through an example? I think we have an example here. Yeah, so here is an example. So if x is 1, we want y to be the returned value, right? But x is 1, y is 0, z is 1. So let's try. The first part, 1 and 0, that will give us 0. And then or with and negated 1, in this case, well, we don't really have to expand it, but let's do that. We have like every single bit is flipped, right? So we'll have all ones and then a zero. And then one itself is just this value, and ending this still gives us zero. So zero ord with zero gives us zero. And that is the value of y. So that's what we expected. So far we're good. But this will not work if we break that assumption in the beginning. It would be nice if it holds, you know, if we would be so lucky, but we're not. if we have x is 1, y is 4, and z is 2, so you know, x is 1, so the result should be 4. So let's see how the math works out. 1 ended with 4 gives us 0, so we actually lost y entirely. We just ended up with 0 there. And then negated 1 and 2 gives us 2. This one here and this one there, they hold, they stay. So we get 2. And you know, we expected to get 4, which is y, and we got 2, which is z. So that doesn't work. So we have to do better. And why doesn't it work? So it didn't really work because we lost y. We had all these zeros, and all these zeros just erased the value of y. So can we fix that? Let's now have x and z. They can be numbers, integer numbers, but then let's keep x as a 0 or 1, not 2 or 3 or any other value. 10, just 0 or 1. So look at the old solution. So x and y and not x and z. All right. So we had them broken down like that. Yeah, and I guess the idea is, so can we mask? Like what we really want to do is we want to keep the value of y and eventually also of z, you know, somehow. We want to keep all the bits. And we can do that with the mask. We learned that masks allow us to do this. Masks with the and or the other bitwise if necessary. But then what should be this mask? You know, we want to end y with a certain value and probably with all ones. Now for y, because we have just x ended with y. If x is 1, we want to generate a mask like this, all ones. And then ones ended with y will basically keep all the bits in y. And if it's 0, well, for this half, you know, just this half here, we want a 0. So we want to erase y entirely. So luckily, this is already there. You know, we don't even have to generate it. If x is 0, basically we have it. Now, how can we achieve it? How can we achieve this mask? How can we go from x being something like 0, 0, 0, and so on, and 1, to go to, you know, all ones? And, well, one trick is multiply it by minus 1. And you might say, well, that's a multiplication. And it's true. So here we are going a little bit away from bitwise. We are doing a multiplication by minus 1, a negation, or an add or sub to, right? So yeah, it's not bitwise, but it's still not too difficult. It's somewhat simple, right? We just have to multiply by minus one. So that gives us this mask. And in the next slides, we'll see how we can do this actually with bitwise. But in this case, let's go with this operation first. And then with Z, what do we do for Z? So it's the other way around. If X is one, we want it to clear all the Z. And if X is zero, we want it to give us all Z, right? So X is one, X is zero. So for zero, we want to get all these ones. And yeah, for one, we want all the zeros. So this is not gonna be the same. This won't work, you know, just minus X. But how about minus X, X or a one? So it's almost like we turn the zero into a one, and then we negate. We multiply by minus one. So this operation gives us those bits, the mask. Do we agree? I see a lot of confused faces. Okay. Yeah. So we want to manipulate bits at the bit level. So we have a register that's 32 bits full with bit values. And we want to be able to control in a specific way the bits in that register. And one way we can do it is we can AND all those bits with a mask, with another register with bits, but now that we know the value of those, we will be controlling all those initial bits. That's what we use a mask for. And to go back to my example from graffiti, you know, using like I think we could refer to it as a mask. So what's a famous graffiti? Banksy, right? So Banksy might have a piece of paper in which he makes like some shape, and then he sprays on that piece of paper. And the paper stays on the wall. So some paint goes to the wall, but some paint goes on the paper, and he removes the paper. And the initial drawing on the paper or cutout from the paper gets on the wall. So he can make multiple copies of that, right? So the same imagine with bits. We have a mask, and then we have this spray of bits. But because the mask has a certain drawing, when we spray on the wall, we only have the bits we actually want. So it's a way to manipulate bits in a way we want. And in this case, we're doing things kind of simple, right? We're taking the whole thing and either setting it to all zero or to the thing itself. So in this case, Z, it's either going to be left as Z or we're setting it to zero. So our masks, you know, full is all ones or all zeros, but it doesn't have to be like that. We can have, you know, patterns. That's what I meant by that stance. You can have patterns of that. So now if we, now that we have these two, so we have a minus X and we have this other one. So we replace in the original solution, we replace X with these values. And when we do that, so initially we had X, now we're going to have minus X. And then here we had, what did we have? We had a minus X already. So here we had a negated X, right? So going back, we will replace that with that value we just agreed on, with the minus X XORed with one. And now if we have X being zero or one, and Y could be, you know, four, Z could be any other value, two, this will actually work. All the bits will be preserved. Yeah. So negated tilde X What is the difference between minus x and negative tilde? That was the question. Negative tilde x takes every bit of x, so x0, x1, and so on, sorry, xn, and it negates every bit. It turns a 0 into a 1 and a 1 into a 0, while minus x will really multiply it by minus 1. So if you had value 3, you're going to end up with minus 3, which is not the same, right? Does that answer your question? Yeah? Go ahead. So what are we really trying to solve? Back to the bigger picture. We have this operand, ternary operator. So one thing we're trying to solve is we're trying to learn strategies to break down a problem into smaller problems and use this bitwise operations to, you know, solve something. And what are we, this is like our exercise, our practice. And what are we actually solving? Well, it's like, how do we do if else without using, you know, comparators in the assembly? How do we implement if else using just bitwise operators? So the ISA has comparators, so you could actually compare the value of X and then jump to, you know, Y and to Z. Or you could use this bitwise operators, which are also, you know, part of the instruction set, and get the same thing. So there will be no jumps. Yeah. That's the bigger picture. And first we did it with all of them being bits, just a 0 and 1. And then X stayed at 0 and 1, but then Y and Z were just regular registered 32-bit numbers. And we have this solution. So this is our implementation of that case. You know, we apply we multiply x by minus 1, end it with y, OR it with the other expression, and that is the result of x ternary operator y else z. So this are equivalent, where x is 0 or 1, that's 0. And y and z can be any value, any integer value, that could be value. Any more questions? Now, the last part is, you know, let's get rid also of this constraint, x being 0 or 1. In this case, now, even x can be any value. So how can we reduce this problem to the previous one? We have x now being any value, right? X is now x0, x1, x2, and so on, xn. And we could reduce the bits into one bit. So what do I mean by that? Say I have 1100. Is this a 1 or a 0? You know, this is a 1. This is a logical 1. If x, if 1100, that's not Boolean 0, right? So this has to reduce to a 1. And if I have just 0, 0, 0, and you know, there are 32 bits here, right? So this will be a 0. So our problem is really, if we can reduce x to just one bit and then use that one bit as the argument in the previous problem, in the previous solution, then we're done. So this solution, by just reducing it, we can get to the previous solution we have. This problem reduces itself to the previous solution. Now we could just, you know, use this exclamation point x equals to 1, meaning we could do that and then do it again. So we turn a positive number into a 0 and then a 0 into a 1. Right? So we turn x, where x is bigger than 0, we turn it into a 0, and then a 0 and into a 1 by doing a double exclamation point. Or if we have a 0, x equals to 0, then we turn it into a 1 and then into a 0. So if we just replace in the previous solution the x with exclamation point X, we reduce this, we get the solution. However, this will actually be using the test instruction, test Q. And well, it will actually look from at the zero flag. But we really wanted to do only bitwise, right? And here we are not doing bitwise. So this is a solution. It's good enough. And we could skip the next part. So yeah, here is how that ends up. But we can do better. I want to go really quick through this because I think it's not as important, but it's also quite interesting. So what we really want to do is reduce the bits from many into one. If we have all zero, just reduce it to 1 0. If we have, you know, just a bit pattern and there are some ones, then it's going to be a one. That's all we care about. Is there a one anywhere? That's really all we care about, right? So the problem is any bit set? Any bit of X set? And if we can find the easy way to do that and put that value into our previous solution, then again, our solution is even more efficient, right? One way to do this is look at every single bit. So AND with one, and then OR, and then again, but shifted by one. So each bit will end up being ANDed with one. Now, this is a lot of ORs. This is only 4 bits in this case. So to make it more presentable, we're looking at 4 bits. But you know, imagine X is actually 32. So we have quite a lot of these shifts and quite a lot of ORs. But what we're really doing is in the end, everything is ANDed with value 1, which is 0, 0, 0, 0, and so on, and 1. So the most significant bit of X is ANDed with 1. And the shifted version, right shifted version, so the second most significant, least significant, the least significant is ANDed with 1. And the second least significant, because we're shifting it, is again ANDed with 1. And all of these ANDs are ORed together. So all of these ANDs are ORed, right? So a lot of ANDing, a lot of shifting and ANDing and ORing, basically we shift the whole thing towards the least significant bit. And every time we end it with just the one and we OR all of these ANDs. And it's so much work, right? So much stuff to do. And we can try to make this more efficient. So that's the challenge here. You know, like A times B plus A times C equals what? Equals, we can have B plus C with A in front, right? Same here, right? X ANDed with one, or Y ANDed with one. And this is not the Y and Z from the previous problem. This is just some variables we're using here locally. This is a new routine, a new function. We can rewrite that as that. This basically gives us this expression here. But really what we are doing is we are shifting X by one, by two, by three. They all get ORed, so we are OR reducing. We're OR reducing everything and then ANDing with this one. Well, this is already better, no? We already have much less ANDs, so that's nice. Let's skip that. Now, not looking a bit at this last AND, just let's look at the shift and ORs. So, assuming we have four bits, we shift them by one and we compute. So we shift them by one. This one is gone. We got a zero here. We compute OR between each of these, right? That's what is going on. So we're going to have X0, X1, X1, X2, X2, X3. But what are we really looking for? We're looking for X3, X2, X1, X0, all ANDed together. All ORed together. All ORed together. And then all of this will end with one. Like, that's what we're really looking for. Is there a bit that's set? Is there a bit that's one or more? I just wrote, X1, X0, X3, X2, and we have X1, X0 here, but here is this other addition that is actually helpful and useful. So, we are doing this and we're also computing that other one that we need. It so happens that when we shift and we add everything, some more of the terms are actually useful. While before, we were only using the last one. We were discarding everything else. So can we make use of that? And can we somehow aggregate, have in one shift and in one operation use this value and also that? And, it turns out we can. If we shift by two, so how is that going to work? So we shifted by one, we computed this OR, and we also shift by two. And in the end, we get X0, X1, X2, X3. And everything doesn't matter, it's OR. So it's, doesn't harm anyone. And this is going to be, a result placed into Y, and then Y will be placed into Z, and so on. And turns out that this scales. So in C, this would look like that. We first shift by one and OR, and this partial bits, we shift it now by two and OR. And by doing this, just two lines of code, or how many? Two ORs and two shifts. We computed, we reduced OR the 4-bit value, the 4-bit register. And this scales to 32 as well. So we're going to just go 2, 4, 8, and 16. Now, if you will spend some time on your own, I'm sure you will understand the details. But the takeaway from this, and you don't have to memorize this or really understand it, use it in your computer right now. The idea here is that this is the kind of tricks you will see in the homework. Things look like they are long formula, long computation, but you can shorten it. You can shorten the operations by identifying what is repeating in it. And then can you reuse some of those results, just like grab them from there. And we reduced, in the beginning, I think we would have had 32 ORs and 32 shifts. And now we have five ORs and an AND and five. So much better. And I think 32 is actually close to, uses five. So this three structures, these three structures, they keep repeating when you use bitwise. And I hope that they will be helpful in the homework. And yeah, please.
What is the main purpose of that function? You just showed it can be shifted by 32 bits.
So the problem, the function, what is the main function of this thing? Is any bit set in a 32-bit register? So we have a 32-bit register. I'll go properly, I'll write it now, x32, x31, all the way x20, and I'm going to delete this, x30. So we have some bits, and we don't know the value. And the question is any of them a one? Or more of them. If all of them are zero, then its value is zero. But if one of them is one, then that resolves into two, right? Not into four. So how do we determine that in an efficient way? How do we reduce all of those zero ones bits into just one? Is it a zero? Is there a one or is there no one? That was the logical work we just did.
Why do you need
Because so now it's not as clear, but it's because we are looking at the least. Because at the beginning we were looking at the least significant bit. So in the end, will this even matter? A zero ended with one is a zero. A one ended with one is a one. I guess. Charles, yes? Oh, the tweet. Yes. So this bit, eventually, technically, they should end up being zero. Like these zeros, they should propagate as zero. Not all of them. There we go. I see. So when we compute in the end, each time, after all these steps, it's not. So look, we're doing OR, right? So we're really shifting all the bits towards the least significant bits, but we're not deleting the other ones. So if we start with something like 0, 1, 0, 1, 0, and so on, and let's say the last ones are 0, these ones will end up propagating to make that last one a 1, but we're never going to really delete them. So the final answer, X, will still have some 1s, you know, probably like all of them will be 1. I'm not sure. But the final answer will be, you know, some bits, and many of these will still be 1. And we want to mask all of them to get only one bit. That makes sense. Thank you, Charles. Yes. Yeah. And if you want to take the most significant, then you would just do shift left. Then you would replace. I think it would still work. But in this case, we're doing shift right, so. Yeah, don't try to understand 100% everything here. Try to do really well in the homework, because this strategy, where you find some patterns of bits being calculated, and actually the next slides talk about that. So bitwise strategies: find sub problems, split your problem, divide and conquer. Divide your problem into smaller, easier problems that you can solve and then cascade. Use masks and shifts. So X masked with an F0 will, and then shift by 4 will just give you those F, the bits from 4 to 8. Like we use this relationship, commutative, associative, right? Use paper. So use paper, do pen on paper, write the bits on paper. Don't try to do it all in your head. This needs some, it's Boolean logic, right? It's better just to write down everything. And when implementing, it's easy to debug if you have a lot of nested expressions, it might be complicated. What's the value of this thing here? But if you replace that with another variable, such as d equals that, and then just use it, you can print d. You can actually, it's easier to understand, to visualize, and also to debug. So I hope that will help in the homework. And this brings us. Let's have a better. Do we have questions? I rushed somewhat through this, and I feel like a lot of puzzled eyes are looking at me, but we have questions, and drop by office hours. I'll definitely be happy to answer questions. So this brings us to today's topic. We want to talk a bit about instruction set architectures. What are instruction set architectures? So the ISA is really the set of commands that the software, the compiler, uses to interface with the processor implementation. Here's a list of ISAs that are manufactured. You can make your own ISA. There are many ISAs. created, forgotten, and so on. But some of them that are still in use, x86, very popular. Most of us have it in the laptop. So it's dominant in desktops and servers. ARM is dominant in mobile, starting to be quite dominant in laptops and servers as well. Power PC, so Power ISA from IBM, very popular in supercomputers and some servers. MIPS is a very small one. So they come in different sizes, and you can think of them as strengths or complexities. So MIPS is meant for a more simple, very, very, very tiny implementation of a processor, but more simple. RISC-V is an interesting ISA because it's, first of all, it's RISC, and another one is open source. So you don't have to pay royalties to use it, to implement it. So you can implement your own processor with this ISA and run RISC-V compiled binaries that other people compiled without having to pay royalty to anyone. So it's, you can start your own processor company. Z80, very tiny ISA, very targeted to be as simple as it can for used in TI calculators. So it's important to make the distinction between ISA and microarchitecture. Microarchitecture is the design of the hardware. You can take an ISA and implement the processor, implement the architecture, the logic that executes that ISA specification in many ways. For example, x86, there is the Intel processors, and then there is the AMD processors, and they all run the same binaries, but it's different companies, different people implemented it in different ways. And then they behave differently. Some of them run hotter or run faster or need less power. Or cost less, right? There are all these metrics. And then even inside the company, you have different implementations. As again, Intel has different flavors of the same core. You know, you have a core design more for low power, a core design for high performance. Same with AMD. So the microarchitecture is how is the implementation, is the design of the hardware that implements that ISA. Then the instruction set is the interface visible by software. So no matter what the microarchitecture is done, what the design of the hardware, so the software will see it with this set of instructions. So So the ISA is really what matters to the compiler, to the software. And it enables actually this compatibility. So you can implement a microarchitecture in many, many ways, but then you run the same product, the same binaries, same operating system, same programs, will just be compatible, will run with no errors. Now, there are many. So when an ISA is proposed or first comes out in the world, it's not like it never changes. There are always new instructions or modifications, and we refer to those as variants. X86, 64, or ARM, there's always new instructions to them that improve the performance, or maybe something was missing, or something at the ISA level was not optimal enough, or can be improved. So then there are always these improvements, new instructions defined. A lot of the important specifications stay the same, just perhaps extra little new instructions here and there. And usually you have compatibility. So old code will run, old binaries will run on the new. So the old instruction and the new instruction are still there. So old code will run on the new processor, and newer code not necessarily so. Might be one of the reasons why I cannot install Windows 11 on this machine. So I think it's a security issue, it's not the ISA. So that's about variants. You know, ISAs, they can vary a little bit, but then one family of ISA, or let's say x86, has planned many different variants and so on. From the philosophical perspective, ISAs, they we speak about them as a CISC or RISC. And CISC, so it's complex instruction set computer, and then RISC is reduced instruction set. So reduced meaning from complex, somewhat simple, reduced. Who does the work? CISC might have, first of all, many more instructions, and some of them are very complicated, like with loops. RISC, and we'll go into more details. RISC has less instructions, fewer, usually, not necessarily, and simpler instructions. So it's harder to make the processor, to implement the processor, microarchitecture for a CISC, because every single, there's more instructions and they are maybe more complex. They do more work in one instruction. So you have to actually make all this hard, make this complicated hardware for the CISC. While for RISC, it's easier to make the hardware. But then in terms of assembly, you know, for CISC, there is less work, less to assemble. It might be easier to go from C to the assembly there because there's an instruction that does maybe the same thing as C does. Well, for RISC, every single, perhaps computation block has to actually be broken down into very atomic instructions so that it's harder to assemble. But there is no firm distinction there, like very specific. Did I skip something? Because this is my... I'm so sorry. I clicked the wrong button. I skipped a few slides. We looked at this, and let's go through an exercise. So speaking, we spoke a bit about ISAs. We spoke about how we discussed about how the ISA is this set of instructions that the software sees, and then the set of instruction is what the microarchitecture provides. Right now, which of the following changes to a processor will result in changes at the architecture, the ISA? And we have a few minutes left, so there's this multiple choice. What do you think is more of them? You can pick not just one. I think more of them are the case. Which one do you think are important? Take like a minute. Process. Need more time? Or should we attempt? So more results are correct. Who thinks A is part of the? Okay. Who thinks B, decreasing the runtime of the add instruction? C. D, removing the multiply instruction. Okay. We have quite a lot of answer. And E, allowing the add instruction to have. Oh, yeah. So let's look at one by one. Starting with, let's say, D, removing a multiply instruction. So that's quite clear, right? We are removing an instruction from the ISA, specifically a multiply, that will need to be making a change in the ISA. We can still make the multiply in some different way, but perhaps more complicated. Making the machine code for add instructions shorter. So we have to change the machine code. The ISA describes how the machine code looks like. So yes, making it shorter, we have to change in the ISA the length of the add machine code. Decreasing the runtime of the add instruction. So the runtime is something behavior. It's how fast the microarchitecture computes add. It's not defined in the instruction set. The instruction set doesn't have a time. So this is definitely not, doesn't change. A, increasing the number of registers available in assembly. Number of registers is specified in the ISA. And then E, so this is correct. E, allowing the add instruction to have two memory operands. So we've seen how instructions usually have the registers, the attributes, and instruction and the attributes, perhaps two source and one destination, or just one source, one destination. In this case, allowing the add instruction to have two memory operands. If it was not the case already, then yes, this is also a modification in the ISA. So this looks good. Page down. So some of the goals of an architecture. And this is also an exercise, but let's just do it live. What do we want to achieve? How, if you design an architecture, what would you like? What would your goals be? You know, you're designing some goals in mind. So, say you are designing the best architecture for your design constraints or so. What would your metrics be?
Efficiency, power, and size.
Okay. Uh-huh. Yes. So. Sorry, efficiency, power, and size. Efficiency, power consumption. That I think would go with efficiency as well, right? Or let's say power and size. Size is chip size. So more instructions means more logic dedicated on the processor. So that means more size, logic size. What else would you prioritize? Would you think of? Yeah. Flexibility, you okay? Flexibility. Any other ones? Yeah. Yes. Completeness. I agree. Yes. Okay. Functionality, completeness, functionality, so that it works, right? Yeah. Yeah. Let's say that. Uh-huh, please. Compatibility. Compatibility with what?
I know earlier you might have missed some information about how sometimes like old code will generally work with newer.
Yeah. Okay. So compatibility with perhaps older versions of that ISA. Yeah. So with variants. Okay. I think some additional ones might be, you know, so related to efficiency, how easy is the ISA to implement in microarchitecture? But then the other direction, how easy is for a compiler to use it? And then imagine that the human is the compiler. So you're writing assembly. So how readable it is, readable to a human. So those would also be some big steps. Would make sense. I believe we're out of time. Thank you very much.
I really think this question I'd be right. Yeah. I just need to submit the request.
Okay, yeah, just do that.
Okay. So I think 000B also satisfy this. Because like 11 divided by 4 will be 2. And 11 minus 2 is still 9. So this will also be negative.
I think there's probably some answers over the past. Yeah, there's some answers I didn't curve the team. I'll probably run it to check. Okay. I don't think I've heard of the full range of things that count.
Okay. So we'll have to look over. We'll look over, or okay. A TA will look over
the set of other answers.
Yeah, maybe do the listing rate request and just specify the common that your answer placed into that relationship actually to be false and wise.
But we haven't had someone look over all the wrong answers yet.
Okay.
So, and that should happen even if you don't submit a regrade. Someone should look at the wrong answers even if you don't submit a regrade.
Okay.
I
will have some.
They will because I will insist at the next TA meeting.
About the homework. It's loading. I was fine, but
microarchitecture, and then people program it.
So there's a relationship here. So the ISA is the interface for designing like the little compiler and so on.
And so I have a problem understanding this thing.
And if you're building
you'll design the ISA with X. I think this is very confusing.
But and usually there's that kind of relationship. We talk about like the role of ISA being power. Like there's nothing inherent about the interface of the private compiler which says that it's a compiler power.
Yeah,
but there's things you can do which might help refer to making the like run compiler.
So there's like a trade-off.
Yeah. So like as you say, like if we have 10,000 instructions, we're probably not making a very low power implementation of that ISA.
I don't know.
Because you have to support all of it. But but there's still gonna be a wide variety of ways we
can do it.
And we have kind of
I see what you mean. It's not that simple to understand.
Instructions that we know would be implement.
Yeah, but it got really confusing because I wrote something that's like 500. 500.
But it's like a trade-off because you're partly designing it for building hardware, and partly you're designing it for
9 and 5. 30 are really different because like 5 to 9 here you need to the only difference is that for 530 Z is 2 and for this question W should be 1 because 0 failed and if it's this 2 then this should be 0 and that's very confusing.
So those sort of efficiencies happen all the time. Another decision is how many registers you
this one.
I don't know because the wrong test automatically and I cannot get
128 registers.
Thank you. Thank you though.
Other events.
I remember taking DLB, depending on how hard it was making, just like 8 registers or something like that. That's